And here we have our survivors. Marcy Carpenter is the newest national rep from the National Federation of the Blind Board of Directors. She's also the state president in Washington State, and she holds a number of different committee chairs in the National Federation of Blind. We also have Cheryl Fields from Ohio, who's on the Survivors Task Force and has been serving in that capacity for quite some time now. And we have our very own Sarah Myers on the presentation to introduce these guys. So Sarah, if you want to start us out, let's go for it.
Good afternoon, fellow Federation family. This is Sarah Meyer. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am really grateful to have this opportunity to introduce my fellow survivor sisters, Marcy Carpenter and Cheryl Fields. We were a part of the survivor-led task force that was initiated in January through July, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to have them share with us. So I'll let them take it away from here. Thank you so much, Marcy and Cheryl, for being here and for working together to help our organization become stronger and safer and more inclusive, because it's truly what this is all about in terms of being stronger together. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. I am Cheryl Fields, and wow, what a great convention you're having here in Indiana. So as Sarah said, on behalf of Marcy Carpenter, Sarah, and myself, thank you, President Brown, and to the Indiana affiliate for inviting us today. So, and we thank each of you that gave your expertise, your time, your blood, sweat, and tears to contribute to the work of the Survivor-Led Task Force. We appreciate you. And yes, we are stronger together, and we're going to continue to prove that. So,
computer audio unmuted, video off.
First, I want to give a content warning. Okay, so this conversation for the next hour or so may contain information surrounding the topic of sexual assault or sexual misconduct. We do not want to traumatize or re-traumatize anyone. So we're asking that you exercise self-care. And whatever you do for self-care, and we want you to do that throughout this presentation. If at any time you need to leave the room, that is fine. We understand that, because we are, as Sarah said, survivor sisters too. So, and if you should need additional support beyond this presentation or at any time, you can call RAIN. It's 1-800. It's 1-800.
Cheryl, you want me to jump in?
I have it. Thank you.
Okay. Yep.
656. HOPE, that is the, you know, like the acronym. So the numbers are 4673. All right. And yes, Sarah, if Sarah could put that in the chat, and if you chapter presidents, division presidents, you know, keep that number handy in case any of your members reach out to you. So thank you, Sarah. And Marcy, if you want to begin.
Sure. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. Great. Hi, everyone. It's great to be with the Indiana Federation family today. My name is Marcy Carpenter. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I'm very glad to be here. And thank you, President Brown, for inviting us, and Sarah for the introductions. I want to give a couple definitions, because we're going to use different terms, and so everyone knows the terms that we're using, and talk about why this is important, why this discussion, why are we bringing these things up? Why are we talking about these things? So first of all, sexual misconduct. So sexual misconduct is an umbrella term used to describe a broad range of attitudes and behaviors, both criminal and non-criminal. Survivor or victim is the individual who has experienced sexual misconduct or harm. Perpetrator or aggressor is the individual who was accused of committing an act or acts of sexual misconduct. I want to talk a little bit, like I said, about why we're having this discussion. Some people say, well, we need to focus on blindness and we don't need to be distracted by all these other things. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with this topic, which I understand. It's not an easy topic to talk about. And it's okay to be uncomfortable. And it's okay not to know what to say. So I want to give a scenario first. I would invite some of the people who are co-hosts and who can unmute themselves to feel free to answer if I ask a question. So let's say that you're in a chapter and a group of you are out to eat after a chapter meeting. And some strange person, not part of your group, comes up and kind of starts hitting on someone in the chapter. And you hear the chapter member, kind of laughing nervously and I don't know. And you can tell they kind of are uncomfortable and they don't know what to say. would you intervene at that point? Would you try to figure out how to distract the member or get them away from the person? I think most of us would. And why is that? Well, because we want our member to be safe. We don't want them to be harmed. And that's also why we're addressing the issues of sexual misconduct within the Federation. We want all our members to be safe. We want people to feel included, like they belong. Like if something bad happens to them, they don't have to feel ashamed and they can get support within the Federation and outside as well. But they can get support within the Federation to feel like they belong and like what happened to them is valid. Sexual misconduct can be a lot of things. It can be non-sexual boundary violations, like someone getting too close to you. We all have our kind of personal space. And sometimes that changes depending on who we're with. And that's okay. It can also be, overt actions or talking with a person about sexual issues, personal sexual matters, or even making jokes about certain body parts or sexual innuendo. And one of the myths about sexual misconduct is that sometimes victims make decisions that lead to sexual misconduct. And the reality is that that's not true, that the only people who are responsible for sexual misconduct are the people who decide to perpetrate it. Some of the things you hear that are around victim shaming are, if someone kind of came to talk to you and you said something like, well, I never would have let it go that far. Or why did you go with them? Are you sure that's what happened? Those are things that make victims and survivors want to run away and not talk to you anymore or not talk to us anymore and maybe not be involved. Another myth is that there are a lot of false reports about sexual misconduct. There are not. 92 to 98% of reports about sexual misconduct are valid. And sometimes things can be investigated completely. And we'll talk about that when we talk about the code of conduct a little more. also, sometimes another myth is that if you're the victim of some kind of sexual misconduct, if you don't report it right away, then it didn't happen. That's not true, because sexual misconduct has an effect on the brain, and that's the trauma involved. It makes it so that our ability to reason and speak and think clearly is really impaired, and that can go on for a long time, sometimes years. So I'm going to turn it back to Cheryl for a minute. Talk about some consent and boundary issues.
Yes, thank you, Marcy. So, consent. Consent is a voluntary agreement made without coercion between persons with decision making capacity. That's a mouthful. Knowledge, understanding, and autonomy. So, what does that mean? Consent. It has to be an agreement between the people. So using Marcy's example, if we see one of our members that is in a situation where clearly they have not given consent, then we know that a boundary has been crossed, because consent and boundaries absolutely go together. So if you look at your space, the space that we control, if we put a hula hoop on the ground and stand in the middle of it, that is our space. And no one should enter our space without our consent. It's sometimes said, the phrase is used, enthusiastic consent. So if I ask Marcy, oh, Marcy, can I feel your hair? And she says, she has not given me consent. But if she says, yes, sure, you can, then I have the consent. Anything less than yes, sure, you can, I want you to, anything less than that does not provide consent. And there are other factors that go into this. As this definition states, the person must have the capacity to provide the consent. So if we are at the Indiana Convention in person, and I have been hanging out at the bar, and I am obviously inebriated, I do not have the capacity to give consent for someone to touch my body or do anything to me. I'm not capable. I don't have the capacity. For some people, it is, in many cases, it could be alcohol, drugs. It could be a prescription medication. It could just be a cognitive issue. It could be something as simple as a lack of understanding, not even understanding what the question is or what the individual is looking for. But for whatever the reason is, there are times, many times, where we do not have the capacity and to say yes or to say no. And when that happens, if the person that is seeking the consent continues forward with whatever it is, whether it is sexual misconduct, if it is touching, whatever it is, entering my room without my consent, it's wrong. And as Marcy stated, in many cases, it is a crime. However, very rarely do we report. And so becoming aware and educated and learning that these things that happen when someone crosses a boundary and does something to you that is unwanted is not your fault. And it should be reported. And one of the things that we worked very hard on is to create a community that would be supportive of that. So that's consent. And then there are other things that cause people not to, and I shouldn't say people, but cause us not to say no. And one of those things is, the term is power dynamics. So what kind of people do you think hold power over you as we look at ourselves with inside of the Federation and inside of our families? So age is a factor, position, someone that could be a chapter president, a division president, a committee chair, an affiliate president, so on and so forth, a board member. These people that hold these positions hold a certain amount of power over us. Now, does that mean we say yes to any and everything that they ask us to do? I just want you to pause and think about that in a big, broad stroke. Any and everything that they ask us to do? No. And sometimes we need to exercise saying no more often so that we could maintain our own autonomy and control over how we live our lives. Because in order to live the life that we want, we have to be able to make our own decisions over our own body, our own space, and our own lives. Sarah, did you want to add to this? This particular topic is Sarah's baby. And if you have not read Sarah's blog, you can get it at on the NFB website. And I think the title of it is "Who Told You You Could Do That?" And Sarah, did you want to kind of give a brief overview of your blog? Well, if not, I will. So,
Sorry, Cheryl. I got away from my mute button because I was finding the link for the RAIN chat line as well to put in the.
Yes, thank you.
In the chat. So I'll do that in a second too. But yeah, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing this information. I just want to add that, I think it's really easy for us to think, well, we're not impacted by this, I've heard a lot of people say, we're a blindness organization. We don't experience this thing, but this is a societal problem. And these things, like power dynamics and issues of power and control and boundary violations, these things are going to happen in any setting. And so, it's really, I know it feels uncomfortable to talk about them, but it's really healthy for us actually to do this. I know it feels uncomfortable, but I think this really truly is a path to make us stronger together. So really appreciate the information you both have shared. And I think, again, a lot of people wonder how this is relevant to blindness. And so my article that I, or it was a blog post originally in February. And then I think it was, shared in the Braille Monitor in May of this year as well. And I believe, what did I title it? Did I say that was okay with me? Understanding consent and boundaries or something to that effect. What I tried to do in that article was talk about how, as blind people, and just people with disabilities in general, we historically and in the present day still, I mean, things have improved, but we are treated like our rights don't matter, our space doesn't matter, our physical boundaries, our rights, like they don't matter. And so I think it's time for us to stand up and become empowered within ourselves and realize that, we have a right to our bodies and our space. And so anytime, I'm sure so many of us are familiar with, Marcy talked about non-sexual boundary violations. So in my post, I talk about just the all too familiar situation that I think many of us face of, we're trying to cross a street, or we're, in a grocery store or something, just anywhere in public trying to do our thing. And someone just randomly grabs us and, they may mean well, but they in that moment are, grabbing us without our consent because they assume that we are incapable. And so all that to say, I think in our daily lives, we do experience boundary violations, and invasions of our autonomy and personal space. And that's something that we can stand up to. But it also starts with recognizing when there are issues within our own family. No family is perfect. And I do fully believe we are a Federation family, and it takes all of us looking at, what we can do to become more trauma informed, to become aware of our own personal boundaries, and to be able to support and honor the boundaries of others around us. So feel free to, you know, read that article. I can post a link to that in the chat if you're interested. Feel free to reach out to me or any of us with questions about it. Because again, it is, you know, I know it's a difficult and sensitive topic. But I'm really grateful that we're having these hard conversations, because I think it shows the strength and integrity and character of our community and our leadership. And thank you, Cheryl.
Thanks, Sarah. Yeah. And one small thing I want to point out before we go back to Marcy is about crossing those physical boundaries. As we look at our blind children, are almost indoctrinated into not having boundaries, not being capable of providing consent, because they're touched so much without their consent. And so that's another thing I just want all of us to consider with children in particular, small toddlers. You know, you say to them, oh, come over here and give me a kiss. They say no, and then we grab them and do it anyway. We violated a boundary. So we need to practice upholding the boundaries of others, and also listening well, being able to communicate. So Marcy, you can take it away again.
Okay. Thanks, Cheryl. And thanks, Sarah, so much. So I want to talk a little bit about what we can do personally, and then what we have in the Federation in the way of policies, the code of conduct and reporting, and what the task force, and then wrap up kind of with where things are with the task force and survivor issues going forward. So like I said, it's okay to feel uncomfortable talking about these things. They're not easy. And, I grew up in a family where you didn't talk about anything like this. And if something happened and you didn't talk about it, it was like it never happened. And that's how my family was. And I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So personally, what can you do? If someone comes to you and starts relating something, the first thing you can do is to listen actively and to believe them. So some examples of what you can say are, I believe you. We can figure this out together. I'm here for you. Take your time. I'm listening. How can I help? Thank you for sharing this with me. I know it's not easy. You don't have to deal with this alone. Can I share a resource with you? And I would say put that one towards the end, because initially what a person who's experienced some kind of harm wants is for someone to listen to them and believe them, because that's their biggest fear. So, and you can believe someone and, for instance, encourage them to file, if you think it's appropriate, encourage them to file a code of conduct complaint with the NFB. And your believing them doesn't mean that the investigation can't go on fully. The investigation may find one thing or another, but it's really, really, really important. I can't emphasize this enough to tell people that we believe them. So we have our code of conduct in the National Federation of the Blind, and it is a place where if someone has experienced harm of any kind, whether it's racial discrimination, gender-based, any kind of discrimination, if it's sexual misconduct, so all those get investigated. And currently, if a complaint is about a non-sexual misconduct issue, it gets investigated internally. What does that mean? That means that President Rick Capono, the complaints all go to a couple people, and then President Rick Capono learns about a non-sexual misconduct complaint and appoints a committee of people to investigate it. And that committee contacts the survivor and finds out, you know, what does the survivor want? What do they want? And the investigation goes on, contacting the alleged perpetrator and trying to investigate what happened, trying to find any evidence. And that could be things I've talked about, or could be, you know, a chapter treasurer mishandling funds. So there are lots and lots of kinds of things that come under the code of conduct. But as far as sexual misconduct complaints or reports, trying to use the word reports, those go to an outside investigator. And at the beginning of this year, actually late last year, the board of directors decided to engage to hire an outside investigator because it was thought that that would be a better way to investigate these reports. And it would remove any possibility of conflicts of interest or any potentials that an internal investigating team might know the people and have preconceived ideas about them. And I think it's helped to build trust in the process. Tanya Manya is our outside investigator, and I think she has an incredible amount of integrity. I think she's very, very thorough, and I think she works very hard to protect survivors. People can file a report, if you feel you've been harmed by a member or by a staff member or by a leader or by, someone participating in one of our events. And you can also file anonymously. Now, that may mean that you file and Tanya Banya knows who you are, but you decide that you don't want anyone else to know who you are. And that's okay. You have that right. Sometimes that can impact what can be investigated, but sometimes it can still be investigated fully. So it's important for people to have that. And sometimes you, as a leader, as a chapter president, as a chapter board member, division board member, you may have someone come to you and they've really experienced some harm and they're afraid to report. And you should encourage them in a really positive way. You know, tell them that the process is valid, it's real, it supports them. But if they still don't want to report, you may have a responsibility as a leader to still file a report about what you know about. And it's things you know about, you know, firsthand, like, from hearing from the survivor direct. So like I said, all the reports get investigated. And if Tanya determines that there was some kind of sexual misconduct, some kind of harm, then she makes a recommendation to President Riccobono, and he generally follows that unless there's something that we know that indicates that the consequences for the perpetrator should be something different. And it's important to report things that even you think might be minor, like someone who keeps telling sexual innuendo jokes, and even after they're asked to stop, they just keep doing it. And the reason it's important to report things at every level of every level of harm is that oftentimes there are patterns. So someone might have been, you know, telling a lot of sexual innuendo jokes to you. They might have also been acting inappropriately with someone else. And it's really important that we know that and that we can act upon that. So that's some things about the code of conduct and why it's important. I want to also tell you about where things stand with survivor support. So our survivor-led task force made a series of recommendations. There were over 50 as to what we think, things we think need to happen to make the Federation safer and more inclusive. Now, there is also a special committee of the board of directors that's been working on investigating things that happened before the code of conduct went into effect, or investigating what leaders' responses were to reports of sexual misconduct. And they made a bunch of recommendations in an interim report right before convention, and made a report at convention, and will also be making a final report to the board of directors later this fall. We were working with RAIN, and RAIN stands for Rape and Incest National Network. So it's RAINN. So we were also working with RAIN throughout the winter and spring, and we had surveys that many of you may have filled out. We had trainings for some folks, and one of the things that will happen going forward is that there will be more training for people at chapter levels and such. And RAIN, we had some open calls. The survivor-led task force had open calls on the code of conduct and open calls with Tanya. And so RAIN came up with a set of recommendations. So what's happening now is that the board of directors is sorting through all the recommendations and trying to figure out, and we will figure out what things we want to recommend for policy, what policies we want to adopt, what practices we want to adopt, what amendments we might want to make to the code of conduct. to make things clearer. So that's all happening. The Federation is also, if you remember from National Convention, was announced that we will have a, or calling a SAFE fund. And someone I knew, I'd help me, I can't remember the words of the acronym. But that'll be a fund for survivors to apply for assistance with getting counseling and other support services from counseling professionals. And so the board is working on the parameters of that and how to logistics, you know, how do we set that up? Who can apply? What can they apply for? How much counseling? We'll be hiring a third party group to sort of administer all of that to deal with the logistics, the day-to-day logistics. So all these things are happening there. But a lot of this, I understand, is behind the scenes to a lot of people. So one of the things that the Survivor-Led Task Force recommended was the creation of a survivor group. You know, there are lots of groups within the Federation. They're at a different level than divisions and committees. They're an important part of what we do. So the survivor group will be a place for survivors to get support, to network, and the survivor group can also, of course, make recommendations to the president and the national board, and we'll probably work on, you know, providing some of the training. So we had an application process this summer, and it took some time. President Riccobono asked me to sit in on the interviews. So we interviewed people, and President Riccobono will be announcing very soon the co-leads of the survivor group, and then that group will be able to get started and carry on the work. So I know it's felt to some people like there's been kind of a lag, like there was all this focus before convention and at convention. We did all these workshops at convention, and then kind of things dropped off. But that's kind of what's going on and what will be going on. So I want to stop here and first see if Cheryl has anything or Sarah have anything to add, and then we can open it up for questions.
Yes, thanks, Marcy. Just kind of in closing, communication is the key, which is kind of what Marcy just wrapped up things. You know, when we don't know what's happening or going on, it doesn't mean that something isn't happening. So just know that our the survivor voice box and the email are still working and available. We do still monitor that until the co-leads get the survivor group up and running. And so if you have other questions, you can put them there, or you can contact any of us individually. And just always remember that communication, clear communication, is the key to having healthy boundaries and being able to give informed consent. So I don't know if Sarah wanted to add something before questions, but we're open for questions, comments, concerns.
Anybody got any questions or comments, please raise your hands.
This is Sarah. I just want to jump in. I think, Marcy, you were asking, or you were saying you were trying to figure out the name, or not figure out, but the name of the fund is the SAFE Fund. It's, I believe it's the Survivor Assistance to Facilitate Empowerment Fund.
That's
so, so I am really grateful, you know, that idea came directly from President Riccobono, and he, you know, sought advisement from the Survivor-Led Task Force and got support from the board of directors. And I think that is a really healthy step. I think some people have said, well, you know, that's what, you know, lawsuits are for. And absolutely, I think that perpetrators should be brought to justice. But, you know, I think something that people don't realize is how traumatizing it can be to go through the legal system. You know, I personally have experienced that. It can be so difficult to find healing and justice through the legal system, which is really not very trauma informed. So I think it shows a lot of dedication, and commitment on the part of the organization to be, you know, putting action to words. So I want to thank Denise Avant, our national rep, who has been serving on the special committee. I want to thank President Brown, everyone who has really supported this work, because as we've said a few times, reiterate, I know these are not easy conversations, but I hope they will pave the way for people to reflect and think about, coming forward, if support is needed, and just knowing that, we can work together to really build a safer and stronger community.
We have a question from
Excellent.
Wanda.
Okay. I believe we have one hand raised, which is that Wanda?
Yes, Wanda.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Go for it.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay. As a couple of you well know, that it's a case that's ongoing. And Tanya, I wasn't ready to deal with Tanya because there were some things that I needed to do to help myself a little bit more, like getting more proof. So I did get a camera and we got it installed. But in the process of getting the camera installed, made the mistake of using my telephone to talk to the installation people. And I did not know, and I did know, but I kind of like forgot that they had the person that's doing all of this logged into the phone while the installation was being occurred. At least we think that's what happened. And they got the configuration to shut the camera off and on as they want to come in and out. The first time I left the home, they saw me leave. They saw me come back, but there was a blank spot. In other words, if something went dark, which meant that the camera had been shut down.
Yes, I got, Wanda. Hi, yes. Wanda. This is Cheryl. I love you, but, we love you and appreciate. We really
I was just
appreciate.
Trying to give you an example.
Yeah, your openness, but we also don't want anything to impede your investigation once it's, Yeah,
that is correct.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is you need to be more careful. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I'll stop.
Yeah.
All right. It's another raised hand. Anybody else? Anybody else? Wow, you guys, that was great information. It was very powerful presentation, and I think we all learned something from it. I'm going to give you all a few more minutes to wrap up, and then we'll take a break. How about that?
All right. Mercy, you want to wrap us up? You represent us at every level, from member to national board. So take it away.
All right. Thanks, Cheryl. And thanks, Sarah. And thank you, Wanda, for speaking up. I believe you and you are heard. So all of this is a lot. I know we've given out a lot of information and talked about a lot of different things. As Cheryl said, you can contact survivors at nfb.org if you have more questions or if you have a specific situation you want to ask us about. You can call the National Center number, extension 2238. And you can certainly contact me directly. I'm sure you can contact other folks directly. I'm happy to talk with people and help folks sort out issues that may be going on. Like I said, that example I gave in the beginning about the stranger approaching one of our members and us wanting to keep our member safe from harm from that person. That's what we want to do. That's why we're doing all of this, is to keep our members safe. We have a lot of youth programs and we want our youth to be safe and have firm policies in place about what is and isn't allowed, about protocols, about what to do if things happen. With youth, there are mandatory reporting requirements that are different in each state and sometimes in different localities. So we'll be working to make sure, everyone who works in youth programs knows about those things. There'll be a lot more training going on. And there will be occasional, articles in the Monitor. I'm sure once the survivor co-leads are appointed formally, you'll be hearing from them. And all of this, like I said, is really for us. It's part of our unity, just as much as our Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee is part of our unity. Keeping survivors safe is part of our unity and what makes us stronger in the Federation. I want to thank President Brown and all of you for listening today and for engaging, and encourage you to stay involved in this and to give your feedback and to share your thoughts and concerns. Thank you.